The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, and it is a Friday. Welcome to it, everyone. Yes, Nicole Sandler here, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com, the Progressive Voices Network at ProgressiveVoices.com, or, of course, on the app. We're also streaming video on on YouTube. We're back on Facebook Live, on Periscope, and we're supposed to be up on Twitch too. But with the YouTube, I think it's overpowering my computer a little bit, and I can't start the stream. So here we go. I think I just started Twitch. So hi, Twitch. Welcome to the party. Hey, so it is a Friday, for which I'm very grateful. We are, you know, inching ever closer to Election Day. So that's one hurdle, right? Getting to Election Day is one. And then getting from Election Day to January 20th is another. And then the third and final hurdle of this election season will be getting from January 20th to the 21st. Who knows what's going to happen in that time? This is my job. This is what I do for a living. Granted, nobody pays me a salary, but you listeners who see fit to support the program monetarily, you pay my salary. So this is my job. And as much as I really did not want to watch Donald Trump last night, I realized this is my job, and I had to bite the bullet. So I did. We recorded both of the town halls and went back and forth a couple of times during. And wow, what a difference. And when I hear people say that they're still undecided, I don't get it. How can you not know? How can you not? But then again, I still don't understand anybody who would ever even consider voting for Donald Trump. I just do not understand it. Don't understand it at all. But, you know, I guess that's not my job. My job is just to do this. So we watched it. I have some stuff. I've got some some things to share with you. We'll go through in a few minutes. And our guest today, I am not worthy, Zephyr Teachout is here. And if you're not familiar with Zephyr Teachout, you should be. I first learned of her, it was over 10 years ago. It was during the Air America days, I believe. And she was an activist. You know, she used to do stuff. You know, Kevin Zeese, who we just lost, she was part of his group of great progressive activists who I would reach out to and get on the air. And so I've been following Zephyr Teachout for all these years. I've interviewed her a number of times over the years, but not recently. And so when I was watching these ridiculous confirmation hearings for Amy Coney Barrett, I wanted to talk to her about it. So we'll check in with her at the bottom of the hour. But you know, I like to often start the show with a funny, and I've been become sort of a connoisseur of parody songs. And I've had one, the germ of one, stuck in my mind for probably a couple of weeks now. And and so I finally sat down yesterday and started writing the thing, and it was okay. And then I thought, all right, I'm here alone in my own studio. I'll pull up a music bed. I'll do it. Because after all, you know, I can sing. The problem is, I can't stay on key. So I've got a beautiful singing voice. If I could only stay on key. So I cut a demo and I listened back. It was like, oh my God, I cannot put this on the air. And I thought, who do I know who can knock out a song, you know, with quality vocals and do it justice? Lauren Mayer. So I sent her my lyrics. She, of course, being the perfectionist she is, said, can I tweak them a little bit? And I said, absolutely. Just don't touch this one line that I'm very proud of. I think you'll be able to figure out which one it is. And she recorded it yesterday. And then today she made a little video to go along with it. So with no further ado, I am so excited to debut for you a joint production between Nicole Sandler and Lauren Mayer. And all I can think of is, look, we know we need to beat Trump. It's looking pretty good. You know, it's looking like millions of some ridiculous number, like almost 20 million people have already voted early. That's a good thing. But the thought that kept going through my head these last few days is that we just need a landslide to bring this guy down. And then I thought, gee, there's a song just waiting to be parodied. So, and I give Lauren extra props because Landslide is a difficult song to sing, whether they're Stevie Nicks' original lyrics or the new ones that we made up. Either way, I hope you enjoy. You ready? You can sing along because the words are on the bottom. Take it away, Lauren Mayer. Hit it.
Chance to get rid of this clown. In this crucial election, we all have to vote till a landslide brings him down. Oh, ballot in my mail, I fill you out. Find a legitimate drop box so there's no doubt. And I cast my make a landslide to take Trump down. We need a landslide to take Trump down.
We need a landslide. Yeah, we need a landslide to take Trump down. And yes, Environmental Coffee House gets the prize. It was Kamishwari Kate in the YouTube chat room who gets the prize. The mushroom penis line was the one I was most proud of. Yeah. No more stable genius. He can take his mushroom penis and evacuate the White House grounds. I'm pretty proud of it. Now, Environmental Coffee House said, I think I could have pulled that off. So here's the thing. If anybody wants to take a shot at it, send me an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. I'll send you the lyrics and I'll send you the YouTube link to the karaoke bed that we used. And you can do it. And yes, of course, the mushroom penis lyrics were mine. You can take your I could hear Stevie Nicks do it. You know, She's an old friend of mine, but I haven't spoken to her in a few years. But Stevie Nicks's manager is a very dear old friend of mine. I should send it to her and say, see if, you know, hey, if Stevie would maybe do a version of it, that would be pretty cool. I don't know. Anyway, so that's out of the way. Again, if you want to take a shot at it, send me an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. I'll send you the stuff. You send me back your recording. I'll even mix it. You don't even have to worry about mixing it. Just record the vocals and I'll do it, because the more, the better. You know, and thanks to Lauren Mayer again for knocking that out so quickly and for, you know, tweaking the lyrics a little bit, because mine were a little bit different. But yeah, anyway, there's a bunch of news. Well, there's a bunch of stuff from the hearing yesterday. So I guess we should get to some of that, huh? Did you watch? Not the hearings. God, I got the Supreme Court hearings on my mind. The dueling town halls. Yes. Instead of debate number two last night, Joe Biden and Donald Trump faced off in competing town hall events at the same time on different networks. But you knew that. And the difference between the two could not be any starker. Their styles, their substance, their brain power. And it blows my mind, really, when I go on, you know, social media and I venture into a Trump enclave and I listen and I see them parroting back Trump's really stupid bullshit talking points. It's incredible. I don't understand how anybody could. Oh, Jill Sobule. Yeah, maybe I'll reach out to her, too. How anybody could even think about voting for this guy. The distinction was so stark. Here, let me give you some examples. So in Miami, where NBC last week hosted Joe Biden, they gave, look, the whole thing pissed me off, but I think Savannah Guthrie kind of redeemed herself, because she asked tough questions. She followed them up. She tried to get real answers from him. Now, again, you got to, you know, look at who she's dealing with and know she was up against whatever he is. I don't even know what he is anymore, but that thing. And so she asked him about all the things that have been bothering us and really pressured him to get an answer. Now, she wasn't always successful, but at least she gave it a shot. And that's sort of the where we are today. You're not going to be successful with anything unless you try. That goes for slowing down this Amy Coney Barrett nonsense and Mitch McConnell. And frankly, it goes for, you know, everything having to do with Donald Trump. You got to slow it down. So anyway, Savannah Guthrie started the thing. She introduced everyone. She explained how we got here, such as it is. And then she used the first probably 20 minutes to just pepper him with questions before they went to the audience. And she asked him some tough ones. For instance, what is it with Twitter and why do you retweet conspiracy crap?
Just this week, you retweeted to your 87 million followers a conspiracy theory that Joe Biden orchestrated to have SEAL Team 6, the Navy SEAL Team 6, killed to cover up the fake death of bin Laden. Now, amazing. Why would you send a lie like that to your followers? You retweeted.
That was a retweet.
I know nothing.
That was an opinion of somebody, and that was a retweet. I'll put it out there. People can decide for themselves.
I don't
take a position.
You're not like someone's crazy uncle who can just retweet whatever.
Actually, Savannah, actually, he is. He is Mary Trump's crazy uncle who does retweet these bullshit conspiracy theories. So, and that's his standard answer. I know nothing. Hogan's Heroes, if you've never watched Hogan's Heroes, maybe you're too young, they show it on, I want to say, the Sundance Channel. It's in reruns and it's great. And there's a sergeant in the concentration camp named Schultz who always says, I know nothing. I see nothing. Yeah. Anyway, so Donald Trump, when he gets hit with criticism on something, he doesn't, he feigns ignorance, which is not difficult for him because he doesn't have to feign anything because he is an ignorant oaf. But then she also challenged him flat out on QAnon, and he would not disavow them. He did say he doesn't know anything about them. Bullshit. But he would not disavow them.
Let me ask you about QAnon. It is this theory that Democrats are a satanic pedophile ring and that you are the savior of that. Now, can you just once and for all state that that is completely not true?
So
and disavow QAnon
I know nothing.
In its entirety?
I know nothing about QAnon.
I just told you.
I know very little. You told me, but what you tell me doesn't necessarily make it fact. I hate to say that.
Oh,
I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia. They fight it very hard. But I know nothing about it.
They believe it is
if
a satanic cult
like
run by the deep
study
state.
The subject, I'll tell you what I do know about.
Yeah?
I know about Antifa, and I know about
the radical left,
and I know how violent they are and how vicious they are. What I do hear about it is they are very strongly against pedophilia. And I agree with that. I mean, I do agree with that, and I agree
but
with
that. There's
not a
satanic pedophile.
I have no idea.
By.
I know
you
nothing
don't
about
know that.
That?
Okay.
No, I don't know
you-
that.
He doesn't know that. He doesn't know that the Democrats are not running a satanic pedophilia ring from the basement of a pizza place, drinking the blood of these children that they traffic in. That he doesn't know. Wow. It just wow. Then, you know, on the other hand, there was definitely a less combative vibe over on ABC where Joe Biden patiently answered questions from voters. He did take every opportunity to criticize Donald Trump's inaction and failed response to COVID while trying to explain how he'd do better, starting with masks.
No matter whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, they matter. And when a president doesn't wear a mask or makes fun of folks like me when I was wearing a mask for a long time, then, you know, people say, well, it mustn't be that important. But when a president says, I think this is very important, for example, I walked in here with this mask, but I have one of the N95 masks underneath it. I think it matters what we say. And we're now learning that children are getting the virus, not with as serious consequences, but there's been no studies done yet on vaccines for children. So there's a long way to go, but we can make progress in the meantime and save lives.
Save lives. Yes, we can save lives. Joe Biden, you know, he's always a bit verbose. He talks a lot. But I didn't hear any major gaffes. He didn't stick his foot in his mouth. He made, you know, a few little minor things. Sometimes he ran on too long. But, oh, my goodness, the contrast between the two was palpable. And in one of those moments of contrast, while Trump was refusing to denounce QAnon on NBC, Biden was on ABC talking about renewable energy and climate change. Offering this.
The biggest carbon sink in the world is the Amazon. More carbon absorbed from the air, diminishing global warming in the Amazon than all the carbon emitted on a yearly basis from the United States of America, from all vehicles and all means. So we have to use our imaginations. We have to move in the direction as well, providing for electric vehicles. Electric vehicles will save billions of gallons of oil, create estimated, not me, Wall Street, 1 million automobile jobs. But we're lagging. I mean, we're not investing.
We're not investing.
Doing any research.
We're not. And Donald Trump, what does he say about climate change? It's a hoax. Oh, sorry. He hasn't said that recently. Now he just says nothing. Nothing. But the words climate change and anything related to it were scrubbed from the White House website almost immediately after he was inaugurated. Other stuff. Savannah Guthrie called him out on a story that really the media has dropped. The New York Times a couple of weeks ago had this huge expose with 20 years worth of Donald Trump's taxes, where we learned that in 2016 and 17, he paid a whopping $750 income tax, and he owes somebody $419 million. So good on her, Savannah Guthrie asked.
Personally guaranteed and that will come due in the next 4 years. The question is, on behalf of voters, who do you owe $421 million
Hello.
To?
Let me answer. what they did is illegal, number one. Also, the numbers are all wrong with the numbers they released. And just so you understand, when you have a lot of real estate, I have real estate, you know a lot of it, okay? Right down the road, Doral.
Oh, God.
Big stuff, great stuff. I'm very under, when I decided to run, I'm very under-levered, fortunately, but I'm very under-levered. I have a very, very small percentage of debt compared, in fact, some of it I did as favors to institutions that wanted to loan me money. $400 million compared to
the assets that I have, all of these great properties all over the world. Oh, my gosh. Hold on.
The Bank of America building in San Francisco.
Hold on a second. Some of the loans, frankly, were favors to institutions who wanted to loan him money. I need to go back and hear that again. I'm sorry. There were moments last night, I must admit, that I burst out in laughter because that's how I choose to deal with him. But wow.
I love what's happening. I have a very, very small percentage of debt compared. In fact, some of it I did as favors to institutions that wanted to loan me money. $400 million compared to the assets that I have, all of these great properties all over the world. And frankly, the Bank of America building in San Francisco.
God.
I don't love what's happening to San Francisco.
Well, do I hear you right? It sounds like you're saying $400 million isn't that much.
Chicken change.
But are you confirming that yes, you do owe some $400 million?
What I'm saying is that it's a tiny percentage of my net worth.
That sounds
and
like
you'll
yes.
see that soon because we're doing things. You know,
we're doing
given,
things.
I think it's 108 or 112 pages of financial.
All right, shut up. Enough of that. Enough. Shut up. I just need you to shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Sorry, I shouldn't sing. Anyway. So Savannah Guthrie did a decent job. There was one other thing. And what we've learned now is that any stimulus that we were hoping for by before Election Day is not going to happen. Mitch McConnell squashed it. Nothing is going to happen before Election Day. He said he will not consider any stimulus package over $1.8 trillion. And in fact, yesterday, he even said, I wouldn't even go that high. I'll give him $500 billion. We'll put that on the floor and they can vote on that. $500 trillion in this disaster that we're going through will not go very far. So Savannah Guthrie again asked him. Of course, he blamed Nancy Pelosi. I want to cue into this clip because I don't want to play this whole thing. But this is the end of their discussion on the stimulus. Of course, he's blaming Nancy Pelosi for everything.
Against Nancy Pelosi because she doesn't want to give the money. We
right.
should have stimulus. This was not our people's fault. This was China's fault. And she's penalizing our people. I'm ready to sign a big, beautiful
really?
Stimulus.
Yeah.
You saw the other day, I say, go big or go home, right?
That's what
I want it
about.
To be big. I want it to be bold. I want the money go to directly to the
Senate Republicans
people.
With you, they're going to go big?
They'll
no.
Go,
yeah,
bold
they'll
number?
Go. They'll go.
No.
They're going to be
okay,
very happy.
So far, they have not
I
said
know,
they
because
would.
I haven't asked them to because I can't get through Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, come on.
But Nancy
Bullshit.
Pelosi.
All right, enough of him. So he's blaming Nancy Pelosi for everything. And then, oh, shit, I think I missed the best part where I wonder if I didn't go back far enough. Let me just try one more thing.
This is so, right. you yourself
did
have changed
you
positions.
Did you ever hear of a word called negotiation? We're negotiating.
We're negotiating.
Okay.
Yeah, you know how he's negotiating, Mr. Art of the Deal, Mr. I'm the best negotiator in the planet? Today marks 1 year. 1 year since Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi spoke. It was a year ago today that Nancy Pelosi walked out on those negotiations after he called her, a name, like a two-bit politician or some nonsense like that, and have not spoken since. That's negotiating for you. All right, quick timeout. We're going to come back on the other side with the amazing Zephyr Teachout. So don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler. At NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. All right. Hopefully Progressive Voices is in commercials now. I'm going to play you a quick video from Robert Reich. It's a new one that he just put out a couple of days ago. And it's called something like How to Beat Republicans. So take it away, Secretary Reich.
I keep hearing from progressives who lament that even if Biden wins, Trump and McConnell have tilted the playing field forever. They point to McConnell's rush to confirm Trump's Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett after blocking President Obama's nominee for 293 days because it was too close to the next election, and to the fact that Republicans in the Senate represent 11 million fewer Americans than their Democratic counterparts and are still able to confirm a Supreme Court justice and entrench minority rule. But you see, that's not the end of the story. The Constitution doesn't prevent increasing the size of the Supreme Court in order to balance it, or creating a pool of circuit court justices to cycle in and out. In fact, the Constitution says nothing at all about the size of the court. I also hear progressives express outrage that this imbalance of power exists in the Electoral College, which made Trump president in 2016 despite having lost the popular vote by 3 million, and made George W. Bush president in 2000 despite losing the popular vote by about 500,000. But this doesn't have to be the end of the story either. From granting statehood to Washington, D.C., to abolishing the Electoral College, nothing should be off the table to strengthen our democracy. There's no reason to accept the structure of our democracy when it repeatedly empowers a ruthless minority to impose its will over the majority, or when it denies full representation to U.S. citizens, as is the case for Puerto Rico, which absolutely deserves self-determination. Pay no mind to those who argue that these moves would be unfair abuses of power. Really? Unfair? After what Trump and McConnell have done? Abuses of power? When Trump is urging his followers to intimidate Biden voters? When he won't even commit to a peaceful transition of power and refuses to be bound by the results? When he's already claiming the election is rigged against him and will be fraudulent unless he wins? When he's threatening to have states that he loses declare the votes invalid and certify their own slate of Trump electors in January? I'm sorry. There's nothing unfair about making our democracy fairer. There's no abuse of power in remedying blatant abuses of power.
A true people's agenda. Restructure the Supreme Court, abolish the Electoral College, balance the Senate. That's Robert Reich's latest.
Nicole Sandler's show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All right. It's Nicole Sandler back with you. And finally, here she comes. Zephyr Teachout is with us. Now, I've been a fan of Zephyr's for well over a decade. I think I first reached out to you, Zephyr, back in the Air America days when, I don't know, you were involved in some action or protest or something. And we did an interview there, and I've been a fan of yours ever since. So thank you so much for keeping up the good fight and for joining us today.
I'm thrilled to be on. I was thrilled when he reached out to me. And I was also trying to place the Air America moment. So it's great to be back talking to you.
Well, it's great to have you here. Now, just so people know, you are a law professor at Fordham University in the Bronx. You're a veteran of a number of campaigns. You ran for, you primaried Andrew Cuomo for governor of New York. You ran for attorney general of New York, unfortunately unsuccessful in both of those. But I got to ask, Letitia James is actually doing a pretty good job, isn't she?
Yeah, no, she is. And I've been very excited to see the creative and aggressive work that that she's been doing. So it's very dissimilar to my experience with Andrew Cuomo, where I continue to be constantly angry and frustrated with his real failure to deal with the inequality and needs of the state.
And for good reason. I mean, he's a frustrating man, to say the least. And actually, it's sad because I loved his father. I was a big fan of his. And I, you know, I've been in radio for all these years, and I used to live in New York when I was a child. I worked at WMCA in New York when Mario Cuomo was governor, and I produced a monthly statewide call-in program with him. And he was awesome. I wished that he had run for president. He actually even offered me a job once, but I would have had to move to Albany and I wasn't willing to do that. Yeah. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But Zephyr Teachout, so you also have a new book out called Break 'em Up, Recovering Our Freedom from Big Ag, Big Tech, and Big Money. And that came out this summer, a rough time to release a book.
Yes, it was sort of really hard as an author, because one of the great joys of writing is sitting in a bookstore or a library with 10 or 50 other people and really getting to dig in and talking about the issues and the work that you've done, people who've read some of your work, people who are about to. And I've done a bunch of book events online and I've appreciated them, but I got to tell you, they're just not the same.
Oh, I'll bet. No, you want that face-to-face contact and be able to sign the book and, you know, see people when you talk to them. That's one of the reasons I love, one of the silver linings is everyone's on Zoom now, so I can bring guests in with video and I can actually see you, even though we're not in the same room, but I hear you. I hope people are...
The other thing I was going to say, though, is that was a real challenge. And the real joy has been that the book is coming out really at this moment of the sort of new life of American anti-monopoly activism and law. And, just 2 weeks ago now, the antitrust subcommittee of the judiciary came out with an extraordinary report that, among other things, recommends in its terms structural separation, which is to say breaking up big tech. And so it's actually very exciting to be, the book is intended for a popular audience. You do not need to be a lawyer, I'm telling you. You do not need to be an economist.
Right.
And actually, that's part of the point, is that economists who took over antitrust law have led to so many problems in our current application. But it's a very inspiring moment, because you see the threats and the challenges, but you also see, okay, there's real lawmakers working to actually make change in this area.
Well, good. And hopefully we'll get to a place where they can actually, you know, make change where you know, Democrats once again, or I should even say people with common sense in control again, because that's what we need. There's so many things I could ask you about, and along the lines of what you're talking about in the book. Do we have any antitrust laws in effect anymore? Because it seems like we don't. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when AT&T was broken up into all these baby bells and similar breakups like that. But now AT&T is bigger than ever before. They now own DirecTV in addition to everything else. We look at Amazon, who is... it seems to control the world and not pay any taxes. We need antitrust regulation to come back. Is that you deal with those in the book?
Yeah, it's really been 40 years. I mean, it's one of these, it's not that it was perfect before 1980,
no.
But before 1980, there was a broad understanding that limiting private power was necessary for self-government, necessary to protect our communities and the thriving of small towns and cities and rural areas, necessary to protect small business owners, necessary to protect workers. And that's actually a lot of what I talk about in the book, because I think people sometimes think, oh, antitrust, yeah, but look at people's wages and benefits. And they're actually very, very connected. And we've basically been in 40 years brought on by Reagan, but continued by Clinton,
right,
Bushes, and the Obama administration, 40 years of unbelievably weak antitrust enforcement of existing laws. So the enforcers have been asleep on the job. And actually, you don't have to read the 470-page report from the committee. They're pretty withering about the antitrust enforcers not doing their job. But at the same time, you also have what Reagan brought in is a series of judges who reinterpreted existing laws. So one of the things that we need to do is overturn those laws. And it's one of these areas where I think people have gotten the misapprehension that the Supreme Court is responsible for antitrust, but in fact, Congress is.
Right.
And sort of returning to Congress the responsibility and authority over the structure of our economy. That's what the report is about. That's why I was so inspired by it. The analysis was actually bipartisan, which you never see. Ken Buck, Armstrong, there were other Republicans who said, yeah, we have a serious monopoly problem. Mm-hmm. The diagnosis about what to do was not bipartisan. But when you looked at who the Democrats are on the committee, you have Pramila Jayapal, one of my heroes, awesome. Jamie Raskin,
great
heroes. But you also have Congresswoman Scanlon, Congresswoman McBath, Congress members who are in tough swing districts. Both of those took over in previously Republican districts. So there's huge ideological range. And they're all saying we need structural separation. We need to overturn these bad laws. We need more aggressive enforcement. So I'm an unabashed progressive Democrat. But I'll tell you, this is not an area where, unlike, say, Medicare for All, where there's a division within the party. Once people actually look at what's happening, because the harms of Amazon, Spectrum, Pfizer, Bayer are so deep, and it is a threat to our democracy. It's like you got Trump on one side and you got big monopolies on the other, and we're trying to get through the Scylla and Charybdis to actually a society where people have real dignity and in their workplace, which is so important.
Oh, it is so important. One last word about the book Break 'Em Up by Zephyr Teachout. The foreword is written by Bernie Sanders. So that alone is worth the price of admission. But the book is too. So there's that. Now, Zephyr Teachout, I really wanted to talk to you this week because, like so many millions, I believe, of other Americans, I watched the confirmation hearings this week for Amy Coney Barrett, who sounds like an android to me. She's just so robotic to the Supreme Court. But that's the least of my objections to her. But when I'm researching her, I realize there's a lot of correlations between the two of you. She's only been a judge for less than 3 years. She was chosen by the Federalist Society in a list of names given to Donald Trump for who he should consider putting on the bench. She was a law school professor at Notre Dame. She, from what I understand, though, she never even tried a case. She was plucked out to be a judge on the 7th District Court of Appeals. Because of her very right-wing conservative views. Now, so she's only been a judge less than 3 years. Is she qualified to be a Supreme Court justice?
You know, I think this whole nomination is a sham. I think the entire process is deeply, deeply illegitimate. The idea of selecting a Supreme Court justice in this incredibly short amount of time. So yes, in the last 3 weeks, people have dug up some information, but you certainly wouldn't get, well, maybe a few people do, but I'd recommend against it. You would get married after 3 weeks.
Right.
And choosing somebody to govern us, and this is effectively what we're talking about, is because we have judicial supremacy in this country, choosing a person who will have, along with Justice Roberts and others, the power to make decisions about your body, the economy, voting rights, our ability to pass anti-corruption laws, in a period so short. So yes, I have like particular criticisms, but I am not even engaging in the Barrett discourse, because I think that the entire question is not, is Barrett herself the wrong justice? It's, is this process at all legitimate? It's wholly illegitimate. There's so much we do not know. People are rightly focused on selecting a new Senate, yep, Congress, and president. It is the wrong time. And it is, I have been really disappointed in watching the hearings, because there's something about sort of even asking her tough questions about her past puts her in the play of being somehow normal, and this whole process being somehow normal. And it is a wholly, wholly problematic process. And I The field that I have spent the most time studying, I'm recently in the antitrust and anti-monopoly field, is election law. And I actually first called for expanding the court after the wholly illegitimate decision of the Supreme Court in Shelby County.
The Voting Rights Act, right?
Yeah, where Justice Roberts, in a massive power grab, came up with a very creative, and that's a generous way to put it, theory to strike down this essential law that protects basic freedoms. And the idea of a 6-3 Roberts court, I got to be blunt with you, whoever is in that seat, if it's a 6-3 Roberts court, we are talking about the little that is left of the Voting Rights Act and what is left of our campaign finance laws being under threat. I can imagine next year a decision of a new 6-3 Roberts court saying that corporations can state political parties can take unlimited corporate money. Like, we've already moved pretty far down the Citizens United path, and it's had devastating effects on our politics. So I'm pulling out my hair. I got to be honest with you.
I bet.
This is a hair on fire, house on fire moment. And yes, Barrett is a problem for the ACA, but I actually really feel like the Democrats have not been apocalyptic enough, because it is the ACA, it is our bodies, it is our democracy. It's the game. This is, the whole game is up right here.
Right. And on Twitter, Zephyr, you have said the Democrats need to do whatever they can to hold up this process. You know, and in the midst of this, they passed a continuing resolution. Was that the right move? Should they have shut the government down?
Well, what I proposed, and I let lawmakers that I know they should have done, is do a week by week continuing resolution.
Ah.
So it doesn't continue to keep the government open, which is really important, but force Republicans to come in every week for a vote, force debate. Mitch McConnell has a bunch of Republican senators who are in extremely tough races.
Oh, yeah.
Make them be in D.C. for votes, for roll call, deny unanimous consent at
everything.
Yeah. And sort of keep them in D.C. because at some point, those senators who are in these margin thin races may say, Mitch, that's one ask too many. I need to be back in my district, and people don't want to hear about that vote. So that's one thing they should have done, is do rolling continuing resolutions instead of just one. Second, immediately, it's true that on Twitter, I've focused a lot of ire on Senator Schumer because I don't think he's shown the leadership he should, and allowing Feinstein to run that hearing.
Oh my God. We'll get into her in a minute.
but I also just want to be clear. The House has a real role here as well. There are certain bills that the Senate must take up if sent over by the House.
Impeachment, right?
And impeachment is one of those. And what you will hear is that, well, McConnell could get rid of impeachment fairly quickly by putting it into a committee. But first of all, Bill Barr needs to be impeached.
Yes.
I mean, and Trump's choice of his top legal officer and his choice of his top justice are deeply connected. These are not disconnected issues. And second, I used to be a death penalty lawyer, and what you would not do, and I was a very junior death penalty lawyer working with some of the most extraordinary people I've ever known, and I really learned a lot from them, but I never heard somebody say, well, there's only a 1% or 2% chance that this appeal will work or this creative theory will work, so we're not going to try it. And I'll be honest, I have no promise to the Democrats that if they use impeachment or they use the amendment strategy or they use continuing resolution, I can't promise you then we necessarily stop Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have the number of votes that McConnell has, you have such little time, we have to be trying everything, even if it's a 1% chance of working.
Exactly.
Because the human cost is so great.
Right. And so they haven't been, though. They haven't used these stalling techniques that people like you and others have been saying from the get-go that they need to take advantage of. They haven't. They're just, oh, well, it's inevitable, so we may as well just let them do it.
And one thing that I've really been pushing again, and I've been pushing to the lawmakers that I know, is something that, you know, basically any corporation would understand is when you're in a crisis moment, you develop a war room.
Yeah.
That is focused exclusively on procedural tools and messaging tools and ways to resist, delay, disrupt. And I haven't seen the reporting about the existence of a war room. And by war room, I don't mean a few people that you call once in a while for advice. I mean, I want to hear about the, you know, 20 people sitting around a room sleeping, but otherwise working around the clock, gathering every idea, pushing every moment. And I need that. We all need that because we also need, as Democrats, our biggest threat. I believe Biden is going to win. Knock wood.
Me too.
But our biggest threat is an enthusiasm gap. And showing that Democrats are fighting for working men and women in this country, for people who are suffering, for people who've fallen under the poverty line, for people who desperately need our help and protection, showing that we are willing to go to the wall on that, that only helps bring out the vote for the senators and for Biden and for the Congress members. And I am I'm piping mad. I'm really mad. Because and they better if Barrett gets through, they better rebalance. They better rebalance the court. But I have been focused less on that because we have a moment right now. Don't tell me what you're going to do in January.
Afterwards, right. Let's prevent this disaster from happening. You know, I thought that the Democrats were good in that they obviously coordinated what they were going to do. They focused in on the Affordable Care Act. After all, there's a date set in the Supreme Court for 7 days after Election Day. And But the fact that and they did a great job. And then some of them veered off. Sheldon Whitehouse, I thought, was brilliant in talking with talking about the dark money influence and everything and going there. I thought Kamala Harris did a great job. I thought a number of them were really good. But then I'm watching. I don't know. It's one of the MS.
Let's just to be honest here, we're going to disagree on this then.
Okay. But then I saw Al Franken being interviewed and he brought up a line of questioning of Amy Coney Barrett from 2017 when she was nominated for the appeals court. Let me play this clip. Hopefully it'll work. She lied. She lied under oath this week, and this should be on the front pages everywhere. This should be on the lips of every Democrat in office. So here's what she said when Al Franken questioned her.
The Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups, describes ADF as a group that has, quote, supported the recriminalization of homosexuality in the United States and criminalization abroad. Professor Barrett, if my understanding is correct, the payments you received from ADF were connected to presentations you delivered at ADF's training seminars. Is that right?
Yes.
You were not aware when took the gig.
By the time I spoke, I was aware.
Okay. Brian Williams now.
When she was initially nominated for the federal bench, that was Judge Amy Coney Barrett back in 2017 under questioning by our next guest. But this was Judge Barrett's response to that same line of questioning just yesterday.
Aware
is Patrick Leahy.
Decades-long efforts to recriminalize homosexuality.
I am not aware of those efforts, no.
Really? So 2.5 years ago, she said, I was aware by the time I spoke. And then to Patrick Leahy this week, she said, no, I'm not aware of that. Isn't that a lie under oath?
The way in which I think you and I may disagree, it's healthy disagreement.
Yes.
I think that just shows that this whole process is a sham and that although you see, you may see something that looks like effective questioning, if it's still in the theater that reminds people of what legitimate questioning looks like, it actually helps normalize. Not just her. It's not about Barrett. It's about the entire sham of the process. And I got to tell you, Nicole, what we've seen is despite this withering questioning, her approval ratings have gone up. And devastatingly, Graham's have.
And then Dianne Feinstein. I'm sorry, you brought her up. Why is she still the ranking member on this committee?
And why are we deferring? So if you had a war room, you would not say, okay, so I want to hear the stories about Schumer saying, no, like we actually have to reorganize this. And we don't hear a lot of thinking outside the box. We've got just 2 weeks left. And so I guess what I want to say is questioning within the box, that's, you know, well, you saw some Klobuchar, White House, and Harris, strong questioning, but that's still within the box.
Right, and I hear you.
Get out of the box, have the time and respect of the public that is required for somebody who is going to be our governor for possibly 50 years if we confirm her.
Yeah.
A court that just, like, let's be blunt about it, can just destroy our democracy. So so I want to move outside the box, and I want the senators to move outside the box and not just do the best job within the old model. I guess that's what I'm
Should they have boycotted the hearings altogether?
I think that would have been better than what we saw.
Wow. I hear you. And look, I defer to you. You're the expert here. I'm just sitting here going, what can we do? And at least I see you. I see Ellie Mustal, who's a regular guest on the program, saying, stall, use every tool at your disposal. And they're not.
Yeah. And I say this not, I say this and I'm sort of telling everybody I can, because the opportunities are dwindling. It's true. There's fewer opportunities now than there were 3 weeks ago. And none of them were ever surefire. I know. I'm going to hear the response of like, but that might not have worked. Or
yeah, but you don't know if you don't try. And if you don't try, it won't work.
Definitely won't work. And I guess I feel so passionately about it right now is because we should not. We are asking Schumer to not prematurely surrender. And we're asking Pelosi to not prematurely surrender. So I'm asking you to not prematurely surrender, whoever you are, if you're listening.
Yeah. So what do we need to do?
Call your Congress member and say, create chaos, disrupt, delay, do everything you can. And I will support you even if it doesn't work. Like the point is, you don't have to promise me victory. You'd have to promise me that you are going to fight at the level that this requires. That's the call to action. And right now, I actually think a lot of the focus should be on the House. Send over articles of impeachment. I mean, Bill Barr is not popular, and he's not lawful, so he deserves impeachment. But make Republicans stand there and take a vote about turning that impeachment into a committee. That's not going to sell well at home.
No. So Zephyr Teachout, Lindsey Graham set a vote in the committee for Thursday, the 22nd. So that's the vote to advance it out of the committee to go to the full floor. That gives them a week and 2 days before Election Day. I mean, look, there's really no room to spare here. This should be something we could derail somehow. All we need is a few days, right?
Yes. And I just want to repeat, none of the proposals that I and others are pushing are surefire. I keep wanting to say that so you want to be clear. But there are things that the Senate has an obligation to address prior to anything else, war powers resolutions, other sort of must address resolutions. One of the things we should all be looking for is whether the Democrats introduce those and then pressure from the House. One thing I haven't mentioned is Nancy Pelosi. One thing I don't want to see her doing is she should put together the best COVID relief bill, the COVID relief bill that we truly need.
Okay.
One that we truly need. People are in such desperate situation. And send it over to Mitch McConnell. And you and I and everybody else know, yes, Mitch McConnell will just get rid of it right away. But make him do it. You know,
right, but they did already, right? The HEROES Act has been there since March, and Mitch McConnell has ignored it. So did they send over another one, or did they...
But send over another one.
Okay.
basically, instead of doing the work of the Republicans for them, force the issue. Because now is the time to send over a truly strong, amazing COVID bill. And people are in need. Oh. That's what we need. When I should have said this at the beginning, but it's not just that it's illegitimate to do a jam through a Supreme Court justice in no time. This is just, I think we're going to look back with, like, what? We held a hearing after 2 weeks. This is insane. We have no idea what she hasn't disclosed.
That's right.
We don't know the first thing about her. You know, there hasn't been any time for any serious investigation. But there is another need that is pressing, which is people need relief right now.
Yes.
They desperately need relief. We're facing small business bankruptcy apocalypse coming. We are facing incredible amounts of poverty. Eviction crisis. Yeah. That is what we should be focusing on right now. Not this truly sham, insulting nomination process.
I agree. And on top of that, they're also putting people's lives in danger. I'm sorry. Mike Lee and Tom Tillis both tested positive less than 2 weeks ago, and they were both in that hearing room without masks. What don't they get? I mean, at every turn, you say you're pulling your hair out. So are we. And not having the legal background you have, I don't know what they can and can't do. I just want them to do something.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's a real difference between the folks coming up. So here's, I'm going to end on a little hope. So
okay, please.
There are new Democrats who really approach things differently. I mentioned Pramila Jayapal earlier. She's one of the most extraordinary leaders, I think, in the country. I'm just mentioning her. AOC, of course, you know, is right. Incredible. But lawmakers who understand that there is power in leading fights that you can't promise you're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a real misunderstanding of risk, I think, in Democratic leadership, that they see the risk of a minor losses as enormous, and they don't understand the power and the power and loyalty and trust and love and solidarity that can come from fighting hard fights that you might not win. And then that then builds the power so we can win the next fight. And my hope is that that we're starting to see the critical mass build in the House, certainly, and then hopefully in the Senate. Although it's tougher.
Yeah, yes. But we're moving in the right direction, at least it seems. And
the energy is in the progressives, and the progressives are tougher on issues that don't sort of align on progressive or non-progressive fronts, like impeachment.
Right.
Just
right.
A lack, like fear in our politics, as FDR said, is just this toxic poison that disables us. And we should not be afraid. We should be more afraid of not fighting than fighting.
Right. Well, you tweeted something out yesterday, Zephyr, that I retweeted, but I customized it to my Congressman, Ted Deutsch, asking him to do something. And hopefully others have retweeted it with the name of their member of Congress. This is what we need to do. Pick up the phone, get on Twitter, get whatever you use, because there is no second chance. This is it. We've got, 2.5 weeks until the election. And then we're going to have to fight after the election. But let's delay them as long as we can. And hopefully we can derail this travesty.
Yeah.
I have so many more questions for you. I mean, I want to ask, what happens when we get Trump out of office? Do we have any reasonable expectation that he'll be held accountable for his crimes? There's so much more. So hopefully you'll come back.
I would love to come back. It's wonderful to see you again. And
you
it's
too.
Wonderful to be on your show.
Thank you so much. I will be in touch and I will invite you back. Right now, I'm just asking my listeners to take action. Do whatever we can to stop this, because, our lives are at risk. I mean, I'm old, but I've got a 21-year-old daughter. I want her to have the freedoms that I enjoyed growing up with. And so, we got to keep them in mind. Zephyr Teachout, You're awesome. Thank you so much. I'm not even going to put you on the spot and ask if you'll run again, but I hope you do. You know, you talked about the little minor setbacks and you don't win every fight. You know,
I'm very proud of the races I run. No regrets here.
Good. And I hope you'll run again because, you know, or not, whatever, what, as long as you're out there working for us, you're so appreciated.
Well, thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of the afternoon.
Well, thank you. You too. And a great weekend. And keep plugging. Thank you so much.
Take care.
All right. Zephyr, teach out. And with that, we come to the end of another week. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday. Keep the faith and call your congressman. Okay? Thanks. Bye.